Yeah. You're checking out the Slam Magazine Respect the Game podcast. You heard it first from your boy, Jay.
All right, what's good, world? It's your boy, Pete Walsh, a.k.a. Lamborghini Petey. I'm back again, episode 57 of the Respect the Game podcast. Got a very, very special guest with me. Being that it's finals week, you know, we had to go out and get a two-time champ himself, Mr. Sasha Vujicic. Sasha, how are you, sir?
What's up, Pete? How you doing, man? I like that nickname.
Yeah. Well, you're a.k.a. The Machine.
Yeah,
I was always curious how you got that nickname.
How did I get the nickname? I got it from our TV commentators, announcers in L.A. There was, you know, a couple of games that I went on a roll, and they just kind of came up with it. There was a lot of discussion that it was self-proclaimed or whatever, but not sure. I got it from the announcers there and the commentators, so everybody kind of grabbed it, and it carried on.
So did you have a nickname when you were playing in Europe?
Yeah, actually I did. So tell me, what is it? You should know that. Like, I know. Did you do the research?
The wine connoisseur, is that it?
Damn, close. Actually, they called me in Italy, you know, being one of the youngest kids that ever played professional ball there, the way it all started, they called me La Mazza Grandi, which means like a giant killer. Yeah, because I had that baby face and just, you know, playing against the pros at a very young age, it was a pleasure.
I think I like that better than The Machine. But anyway, you know, before we get into it, we're going to talk finals and your career and your time with the Lakers and everything in between. But before we do that, let's talk a little wine, man. You're in town visiting some distributors for Alexander Wine. So, you know, why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you got into wine and how you started the company and all that?
Yeah, well, everything started, you know, my family and I, wherever I went through my career, they came with me. We are very tight, and we are from ex-Yugoslavia, the country called now Slovenia, known for its wine. When I was 14, I signed a first contract and moved to Italy. Everybody came with me, and that's where the passion, like a real passion about wine started, mm-hmm. and the love for it. Little you know, when I got drafted by the Lakers, which was always kind of my dream to get to the league and win championships, as many I could, we had opportunity to look for a lot of different options, knowing that California has is a great area for wines. Learning about wines and coming to California, we wanted to find the perfect blend in a way that can connect the old world wines and the big Californian wines. And in 2009, when we won the first championship, got a gift. You know, our parents, they were looking for years, and then out of nowhere, the property in Paso Robles occurred, and ever since, we've been doing this as a family business, and it's a great thing to have something off the court, something you can relate to, and being with the family and taking it to the next level. Mm.
So, is Slovenia known for its wine, or are there vineyards there, or like what's the deal with wine in Slovenia?
Yeah, well, the city that I'm from, it's called Maribor, and it's the oldest vine there is. Mm-hmm. It goes back more than 250 years. We're also well known for drinking a lot of wine, but you know, growing up, I was not allowed to do anything coming from. From where I was coming from was, you know, untouchable dreams for many to get to the NBA. So I had to live that athlete's life to the perfection up to the point when I got to the league and learned more about life and everything. But Slovenia is a small country, you know, it's ex-Yugoslavia, but drinking was never a problem there.
Well, one of your definitely your most famous teammate, Kobe Bryant, nickname is one of his many nicknames is Vino. So,
Vino,
are you gonna make a Vino edition wine for him?
Oh, he already got a couple of cases. He's happy with it. You know, Kobe, not only he was my teammate, he was my mentor in a way. He's like my big brother, mm-hmm. and from very first day, he took me under his wing and. We had many ups and downs together, and I appreciate him now more and more every day, because I've learned so much from him, and just, you know, working out with him alone, and him teaching me about how to study the game and not only see what you see on the court, but also being prepared. It goes a long way. So yeah, I'm very fortunate to have one of the best of all times being my big brother.
Yeah, and you know, I was watching some highlights from the 2010 finals yesterday, and you know, you had the two big free throws to ice it in game 7, and then after, during the interview, Kobe said that you were one of the most fearless players he's ever seen and that he knows. And I was thinking to myself, Kobe Bryant doesn't throw out compliments like that very often.
Ever.
And if he does, they usually include like an MF-er in front of them or something like that. So, I mean, does that kind of just speak to the type of relationship you have with him? And, you know, why did he come to respect you so much?
Yeah, I think him knowing my journey a little bit and him being in Europe also because of his dad and learning about that culture was big, but also we kind of connected because he always was and he still is a fanatic at what he does. He goes all in, and there's not a no for an answer for him ever. And I think he recognized that I'm just crazy obsessed with basketball. I want to win at any cost, and I'll do anything there is to do at any cost. Normally in sportsmanship, obviously. To win. So hard work paid off, and that's where the respect came from. That's where those words, what he said after the finals. And, you know, we had a lot of ups and downs. It wasn't easy. It took us quite a few years to create that championship team. And it takes time, patient. And he was just someone that seeing every day, competing against, learning from. Right now, when I look back, I'm very, very grateful.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any good stories of him? Like, I mean, I'm sure, of course you do, but like, he's just so notorious, or maybe not notorious, but well-known for, you know, being in the gym at 3 a.m. and then going to practice right after. So did you ever like find yourself in one of those workouts with him one-on-one, and how did that go?
Oh, there are quite a few stories, but you know, my first year, when I got drafted, coach at the time kind of put me on injured list, and you know, I was frustrated, I was mad, and I just was showing up at crazy hours to work out, and everybody thought I was crazy, but Kobe loved that.
Mm.
So there was a lot of emphasis on European players that they cannot play defense and all that stuff. So when the season came to an end, Kobe kind of came up to me and he's like, "We're working this summer, so." I'm very familiar with the workouts at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm very grateful for them. And it's just something that if you want to get to the top, you got to get to the top by giving it your all. Mm-hmm. And that's what it happened over there.
So did you ever ride in his helicopter?
No, I actually lived close to I lived close to a practice facility at the time, and he was taking helicopters actually to some of the workouts, but mostly to the games, because the traffic can be crazy.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of cool to see your teammate going to the games with a helicopter.
One of the most underrated things in NBA history, I think, is like Kobe just pulling up to games in a helicopter instead of like a Ferrari. You know,
yeah, well, he was getting too many speeding tickets, so I don't think he was allowed to drive anymore, to be honest, because I thought I was a kind of crazy European driver, but Kobe took it to the next level.
Yeah.
So he likes that, and I think that kind of helped, you know, with just the rest and not being stuck along the way.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, going back a little further to the 08 finals against the Celtics, you had one of you know, your better games when you scored 20. What was that, game 3, I believe? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you seem to just rise to the occasion in these finals. And, you know, what was it about those moments that just brought out the best in you as a player?
I think I was kind of unleashed, and it takes time to get to a certain level, but also it took us time to play the right basketball. No one thought at that time we could make it to the finals. People forget we were short by one big. Andrew Bynum was injured that year, so that hurt us a lot in 2008 finals. But we just played the right way, and that's what I love about basketball. When you're on a team that plays the right way, that believes in a concept, that goes a certain direction, and you're playing for one common goal, which is winning the championship, there's nothing better than that. And, you know, that year everybody kind of put all the egos aside. Everything was, there was no I anymore. It was us, like, mm-hmm. let's make it happen. Let's just get to the next level. And I enjoyed that a lot, and it was one of the beginnings of how we won in the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the Lakers Celtics rivalry obviously goes back to the 80s.
Really? I didn't wear green for a year because we lost in the finals.
But you know that rivalry and you know. That you guys had with them was really, you know, some bad blood. So do you see any similarities in that to the way the Cavs and Warriors are now, or is that just on, was the Cavs or Celtics Lakers rivalry on a different level?
Well, you know, we can't hide the fact that ours was probably a little bit different because mm-hmm. that's historical. There are quite a few championships in place on both franchises, and it's just it was special, and everybody waited for it for so long. Cavs and Warriors right now, they're playing good basketball. They're two teams that are playing the most of team basketball, the way you're supposed to play to win. And it's actually fun to watch. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. I know there's some bad blood when you meet each other so many times in the finals. And I think it's going to be interesting. A lot of people are saying it's kind of boring, you know, the playoffs and everything, but I don't see that. I mean, I think that the game is good. The game is on a good level, and they're gonna give us a show.
So, you know, everyone's kind of talking about this is LeBron's chance to, you know, get one step closer to Michael Jordan if he pulls off this victory over the Warriors. But you know, being that you have such a close relationship with Kobe, do you see similarities between Kobe and LeBron more so than LeBron and Mike?
Well, I've been with Kobe for so long, so I know him much better than any of them. He's just, I think, the closest to MJ in a way. And the way Kobe studied the game, the way he prepared for the game, the way he went into every practice, every game, what I saw every day was just another level. I don't think there's going to be another Kobe in the next 50 years, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. LeBron, on the other hand, he's playing phenomenal. You know, I never had a chance to play with him, but I played against him. And you know, when you play against opponents that are annoying in a way, you got to respect that, because I think he elevated. Quite honestly, he elevated his game in the past few months on another level, and I can tell that he's been probably studying a lot of the tape and just knowing where to go, when to attack, how to do it, and that's gonna take him on for another few years to try to dominate. So it's hard to compare different times, but I don't think there's gonna be another Kobe in a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at what LeBron's doing now, you know, 14 years in the league, has played over 50,000 minutes already, but seems to be just in the best shape of his life and playing as well as he's ever played. I mean, I personally can't remember ever seeing anything like this before. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that necessarily separates like Kobe and LeBron or Mike and LeBron or Mike and Kobe, but I think there's something to be said for, you know, as he gets older, he continues to get better. So I don't know what you make of that or if you've ever seen anything like that
before.
Well,
that actually plays in my favor also, because we're the same age. So, yeah, you do get better. You do get better when you connect mind, body, and spirit. What I think, most definitely, he's just so mature now. And like I said, he studies the game. He knows, and he's taking care of his body. He's, from what I'm hearing and, you know, everybody talking about, he's a freak when it comes to recovery and taking care of himself and his body, and that's gonna give another few years to his career. And in the next 5 to 6 years, I don't see anybody else taking over. Like, I think he's got just because he's doing it the right way, he's doing it the smart way, and he's surrounding himself with the teammates and the team that can help him get better. So they understand the concept of a team, and I think they did a good job so far. But hopefully soon there will be some teams standing in their way. You never know.
Yeah. So what do you think the big X factor is in this series? I mean, obviously LeBron and KD are going to go at it. Everyone's waiting to see that. And Steph and Kyrie, you know, especially after last year when Kyrie hit the shot in Steph's face to basically seal it in Game 7. But, you know, I look at, like, Klay Thompson, like, he's just in this weird slump that he's never really been in his career. So do you think, like, he'll break out of that? Do you think Kevin Love is going to have a big series? What are you looking most forward to?
I mean, we all know what happened in the previous playoff series, that Zaza is going to be the X factor, right? That's my guy. That was unfortunate to see, but I know he didn't do it on purpose. And that actually changed the outcome of the series, unfortunately. Could have been longer, could have been different. But, you know, in the finals, it's all about the bench. Mm. If your bench shows up in the finals, then you're golden. And whoever is going to have the deepest bench, whoever is going to play the right way, there's going to be some momentum switches throughout the series for sure. It's just who's going to stay more focused and have that sixth man ready.
Mm-hmm. So before we get you out of here, just got to ask you a few Knicks-related questions.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What would you like to ask?
I'd be remiss if I didn't. But you know, you obviously played for Phil for years in L.A. So, you know, what he did as a coach is undisputed, and now that, you know, he's acting as an executive for the Knicks, it seems like he's getting a lot of, you know, heat from the media about, you know, using his tactics that he uses coach as an executive. But, you know, do you see that? Would you say he uses, like, a similar tactics that he used as a coach now that he's a team executive?
Well, you know, it's tough to compare the two, but I'm just going to put it this way. Like, his nickname is, like everybody has a nickname, his mm-hmm. nickname is a Zen Master. So a lot of times I know there was a hit about him doing different things and stuff, but it's just tough, you know, because there are situations now when you see and you're kind of, you know, don't want to see it or whatever, but I know he's someone with the vision. I know where he wants to go. I know he's a winner. It's just tough, and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I'm frustrated about one thing. Last year we had a really good team on the paper. I think we had the team to compete seriously in the finals. Mm-hmm. And if you go and scout the team again, you'll be like, damn, like, why are they home already? You know, and that was the most frustrating thing, not only not making the playoffs, but not playing the right way and going into the right direction, into trying to build and win one day. So it was tough just because our concept this year was not off. And, you know, you see a lot of media knowing more than everybody else, which is interesting. But it takes time. It takes time to get to that top of the mountain. And what will happen, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when Phil was your coach, you know, what – I mean, he was famous for, like, handing out books on planes and giving guys stuff to read. Did he ever give you any specific books to read?
Oh, yeah. He gave me quite a few books, very interesting books. And those books were probably crucial for all of us. Depends on, you know, he's one of those people that kind of studies and knows the personality of a person in order to know how to approach and connect with you. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's one of the greatest. And one of the things that he always had, like, when he wanted to make me mad, first of all, I didn't like name Alexander when I was growing up. I didn't like it, and, you know, there's a funny story how my parents and my family decided to put it on the wine label. So whenever he would want to put me in, he would be like, Alexander, like, you know, he was saying, and I'm like, really, PJ? Like, why you want to make me mad? So he would repeat it and, like, go in. So that was one of those things that I kind of I kind of knew when he really, really needed, like, I don't know, change of momentum or something to happen in the game to kind of get in our way. So I love that, you know, like I said before, Kobe taught me so much, but Phil took that on another level, and what I learned from him and I'm still learning is priceless.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a rift between him and Melo last season. You know, it's been well documented, but, you know, for someone who was on the team, that must have just been, you know, frustrating to watch, especially because, you know, that's your teammate, and two, someone who you've had a relationship for a long time, and Phil. So, you know, what was just going through your head through everything that was going on between them?
It's tough, man. I love Melo. Melo is such a great guy, man. He's incredible, like on and off the court, just good dude. You know, we actually hated each other for a long time because he played in Denver, and mm-hmm. then they never had an opportunity to beat us in LA. So when we first met, when we learned that we would be teammates, it was kind of funny. But you know, and PJ on the other hand, he's just, you know, I know them both now very well, and it's just not something that you want to see. And who knows what's all that about? All we can do is trying to give our best when it comes to being on the basketball court, and that's what I've learned along the career, that whenever you're on the court, the only one way that nobody will ever take away from you is just play the right way, know what the right way is, see the concept, and try to do the best you can for the team. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always done. And you know, if I can give any advice or anything on it, just let it be, you know, the Beatles. let it be.
Maybe you can act as the mediator between the two. But you know, lastly, so you said it was you didn't like the name Alexander growing up, but you put it on the wine. So how did that happen?
So long story short, I never liked the name. That's my first name, but I go by Sasha. And when the lockout happened in NBA, you know, I was so hungry for basketball. I wanted to play. I wanted to compete. Nobody knew how long it would take. And, you know, we got a lot of missed information about it. And then while I was in Europe, we were deciding on a wine name. And we were all on a FaceTime. And we said, okay, who's going to come with the best name? That person's going to be rewarded, because it's five people family, right? My brother, my sister, my dad, and my mom. So we were discussing, you know, I'm dying in Europe, like trying to find the name, talking to them like every now and then. Did you guys find it? No. So they came, my parents came to visit me, and I knew they would bring the bottle of wine, but with no label, nothing. So I'm in the kitchen sitting, like, and they bring the bottle, they put it right in front of me. And I'm like, oh, that's wine, can't wait to try it. I'm excited. And then they're like, spin the bottle. So I spin the bottle, and on the bottle was like Alexander. And I'm like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, damn, that looks good. It actually looks really good on the wine. And that's how I don't mind it anymore. You know, like, I'm not that kid anymore that was trying to run away from the name. And I'm very proud of it, actually, because it's a family business. It's what we stand for, it's what we believe, and building a brand now in New York is crucial for us. So meeting with all different kinds of accounts and stuff, having my brother here who's in charge of everything, you know, you can look at him right there, look at that business look he's giving all, us right now.
He's all business.
That, though. Yeah, but you know, like everything in life, it takes time to find the perfect teammate.
Mm-hmm.
And like any other business, basketball, like, you just got to find the right team to play your game and to play the right way. And we had people before that working for us, and it just didn't work out. In the 3.5 years, we didn't go anywhere we wanted to go. Los Angeles and Vegas are good markets for us, but coming to New York is very important, because we want to find the team of people that we trust, and we can go forward and taking our wine to the next level. So that's why he's in charge of right now, as a few months ago, and he's doing a great job. Plus, he's got the GQ look. Look at that.
All right, Sasha, I appreciate you guys stopping by today. Best of luck with everything, man, and enjoy your summer.
Thanks,
most importantly,
man.
Yeah. We'll see you soon. Thank you.